Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. We have a wonderful guest. This is 897B, and our guest is Dr. Darren Ingles, I-N-G-E-L-S, the Lyme Solution. He's an expert on Lyme disease. We're going to find out how he got to be an expert in Lyme disease and what he recommends. To get to his website, it's Dairy, D-A-R-I, Ingles, I-N-G-E-L-S, N-D.com. And of course, our goal today, as in every day, is to give you the information you need, not just the medical information, but what it means for you so that you can take action steps to live at the top of your curve. Darren Ingles, by the way, is, and it may be D-A-R-I-N-I-N-G-E-L-S, we'll find out in a second, is a graduate of Purdue University and naturopathic medicine from Bastyr, B-A-S-T-Y-R, University, which is one of the best. He's been an immunologist and microbiologist at Lutheran General Hospital and is a fellow in the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. Dr. Ingles, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Michael.
And is it D-A-R-I-N or D-A-R-I?
Yeah, D-A-R-I-N, yeah, just like Bobby Darren.
Darren Ingles. Okay, and how did you get interested in Lyme disease? What took you to that course?
Well, you know, I had a broad background as a clinical microbiologist, so I actually did microbiology testing in a teaching hospital outside of Chicago for several years. And then after finishing medical school and residency, I moved to Connecticut. And shortly before opening my own practice, I contracted Lyme disease. So I had the experience of being a patient and really going through a lot of the same things that many Lyme patients go through with various treatments. And
let me go back and get a little specific about it. So I'm going to interrupt you with questions if I can. But what did you do to get Lyme disease? And how did you know you had it?
Well, I was actually a very stereotypical textbook case of Lyme disease, and I had pretty much every symptom that you would read about with acute Lyme. I'm not exactly clear how I got it. I'm not someone who goes hiking through the woods of Connecticut. But for people who don't know, Lyme disease is actually named after a town in Connecticut called Lyme, Connecticut, and I'm about 20 minutes down the road from that city. I suspect I got it from my dog, and of course, dogs spend a lot of time outdoors doing their business, and came back in and probably went from the dog to me. But when I first got Lyme disease, I had 105 fever, I had a pounding headache, I had joint pain, I had numbness and tingling in my hands and feet, and I had meningitis when I was in college, so I thought I might have had meningitis again. And as I was getting ready to go to the hospital, someone noticed I had a big bullseye rash on the back of my leg that I couldn't see. And that bullseye rash is a telltale sign of Lyme disease.
So you had a classic example and weren't tough to diagnose. And did you get an antibiotic? Was there, I don't know, how long ago was this?
Yeah, this was back in 2002. So I went right away to the urgent care center and got a prescription for doxycycline. And really, within 4 days of treatment, I was pretty much 100% better. All my symptoms had resolved. But, you know, being a new business owner, a new doctor, I was working 10, 12-hour days. And after about 8 months of keeping up with that schedule, I started to relapse and get symptoms again. And so I went back on antibiotics, and it really didn't help. And I changed antibiotics, and it still didn't help. And I spent the next 8 or 9 months going through various antibiotic regimens that really not only did not help, but actually it made me worse. I started to lose weight. My gut was a mess. And I started to realize that, you know, there were other ways that I needed to start approaching this.
Now, Darren, I wasn't, and we're talking to Dr. Darren Ingles. The book he has written is The Lyme Solution, published by Avery Penguin Random House, is the distributor. And Darren, if I can call you that, I didn't realize Lyme disease relapsed after aggressive initial treatment. Is that common, or were you just an exception, and or was the acute treatment not appropriate?
I think it's very common. You know, the CDC says that it's a very small percentage of people. I think they quote less than 10% of people go on to have chronic Lyme, even with appropriate treatment. I mean, I followed the standard 21 days of doxycycline. But again, I think anyone in the Lyme world and some of the emerging evidence in the research shows that 21 days is just not adequate to eradicate Lyme disease. So I think it was a combination of probably undertreatment plus the combination of really stressing my immune system, which probably gave that organism an opportunity to manifest. So probably knocked it down to a low threshold, but eventually got to a point where it started to happen again. But I've seen people who've, you know, been through standard treatment or perhaps even more aggressive treatment that over the course of time, they do start to develop symptoms again. So probably more common than people think.
And now what is, let's go and it's gotten outside of Connecticut and New England and in New York, and I understand in Ohio. Where else is it in the country? In other words, do you have to worry about this? And is it just deer ticks or is it other ticks? You said you might have gotten it from a dog. Does the dog get it from the deer, or and do animals get the same disease?
Yeah, so, well, you know, Lyme has always been known to be transmitted by the deer tick. So areas that are endemic with deer ticks, including New England and the central Midwest, have always been hot spots for Lyme disease. But we've really shown that really through birds, you know, birds are now taking these ticks and moving them around the country. So Lyme has been reported in pretty much every state in the United States. So there's no place that's really completely immune from getting Lyme disease. Although, you know, New England, central Midwest, and now actually the western United States, you know, California all the way up through Washington and Oregon have been increasing in the number of cases of Lyme disease. You know, there are other ticks out there. There are dog ticks. There are wood ticks. As far as we know, they don't transmit Lyme, but they do transmit other types of infections that can cause Lyme-like symptoms. And there's even some evidence out of Europe that suggests that perhaps mosquitoes and fleas also transmit Lyme disease. So I think it's the combination that we now have this spreading tick population. There's a report out of the World Health Organization suggesting that climate change is really causing a massive increase of tick-borne diseases and actually even other vector-borne diseases from mosquitoes and fleas. So that combination has really kind of created the perfect storm that we're just seeing now, this massive increase in the number of cases of Lyme disease around the country. We know right now it's about 300,000 new cases in the U.S. and about 65,000 new cases in the European Union, and that's only going to increase. So it's really gotten to epidemic proportions.
And let's talk about how do we recognize that? In other words, I'm in Ohio, as many of our downloaders are in Cleveland. And it's although we have rampant deers, we're not supposed to have much in Lyme disease, although it's supposed to be coming this year. So how do we recognize you had a classic bullet spot on you, I guess, but you weren't able to see it. And I suppose that's true with many of us. We don't see all parts of our body. So tell us, how do we recognize this?
Well, I think, you know, anyone that's had certainly persistent symptoms that haven't been well explained, particularly when it involves chronic fatigue, fevers that haven't been explained, joint pain, particularly joint pain that wanders. So one day could be right knee, next day could be your left ankle, the next day it's your right shoulder. That what we call migratory joint pain is a very characteristic symptom of Lyme disease. You know, there's upwards of 80 different symptoms associated with Lyme disease, and often many of them are vague. But I think anyone who's had, you know, chronic symptoms, particularly neurological symptoms that haven't been well explained, it's probably something that should at least be on the list of ruling out as a possibility. And, you know, there are blood tests that are available to help, you know, diagnose it. However, Lyme disease is a clinical diagnosis, so that means it's really based on your symptoms. The testing that's available for Lyme is not very sensitive, so it misses more than half of the people that actually have Lyme disease. So if you're really suspicious about Lyme, you probably want to get in the hands of someone who really understands it well and can do the appropriate testing.
And tell us about this. So if you don't feel a bite, don't see it, you just feel lousy, what's the chance of someone diagnosing it? And how do you? What's the laboratory tests like? Or is there no laboratory test that is really helpful?
Well, you know, again, this has been a controversy for many years, and the standard CDC recommendation is what they call two-tier testing. So they do a Lyme screen, which is a blood test, And if that test is positive, it automatically flexes to a more specific test called a Lyme Western blot. But again, you know, the research suggests that this test is not very sensitive, so it misses a lot of people that have Lyme. So, you know, often people go in, they get the testing done, it comes back negative, and they're told they don't have Lyme disease. And unfortunately, that's what leads to a lot of people end up with these chronic problems because they've just been misdiagnosed. So, you know, you have to understand that the test isn't great. You know, the CDC even says that Lyme diagnosis is really based on your collection of symptoms. And you do have to go through the process of ruling out other possibilities, including autoimmune disease and other types of illnesses. But there are labs out there that do better testing. So most of us who treat Lyme disease work with these labs specifically. So there's a lab in New Jersey called Medical Diagnostics Lab. There's one in California called iGenX. The test kits they use are a little bit different. The way they report it's a little bit different. And it does help increase the sensitivity of the testing.
And so for the lay listeners, sensitivity means positivity in disease. Is the treatment then, let's just say you've been feeling lousy for 3 weeks, is the treatment then the same as acute? Should one be treating it with the same doxycycline for 21 days, or is it different diseases?
Yeah, you know, it really is different. I think, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that, you know, antibiotics in acute Lyme disease can be very effective. Again, I think the 3 weeks that are recommended are probably too short, and most of us do at least 6 weeks for acute cases. But the evidence for people with chronic Lyme disease for antibiotics isn't very encouraging. And most of the studies suggest that, you know, any benefit tends to be fairly short-lived or there's no benefit at all. And of course, long-term antibiotics, you know, long-term can be really many, many months, even years. I mean, I've seen patients who've been on antibiotics continuously for 3 years, 4 years or longer. So, you know, that obviously has a lot of potential side effects, particularly how it affects your gut microbes. And again, we've got so much research on how important our gut microbes are for controlling our immune system. So from my perspective, when someone comes in and they've got chronic Lyme, you know, we approach it a little bit different, and we really want to kind of focus on the whole body, not really just killing the infection, but it really is kind of about fixing the terrain. So we want to look at all the things that are impacting someone's immune system. And as we start to improve gut health, start to modulate the immune system, you know, we've got all these various therapies that I outline in my book that kind of, you know, walk people through step by step how we can help, you know, rebuild the body and use therapies that are going to work with your tissues instead of against it.
And you've got the Lyme solution, we should say, is the subtitle is a 5-part solution. So part of that is fortifying one's gut health and restoring the immune system. How do you go about that? And we're doing a short course in this, really. So I apologize for it being so short to our listeners, but we should tell them there's much more in the book called the Lyme Solution. And if you will, the website is also informative, Darren, D-A-R-I-N, Ingles, I-N-G-E-L-S, N-D, capital N, capital D, it doesn't have to be obviously capitals, .com, Darren Ingles, N-D, .com. And what is the basis of fortifying one's immune or gut system?
Well, it's really looking about, you know, what's off in the gut. And many people I see with chronic Lyme have a history of, you know, chronic constipation, chronic diarrhea, IBS, these kind of things. So I talk a lot about specific nutrients we can use to help rebuild the integrity of the gut wall, help improve immune function, and of course, you know, repopulating the gut of friendly bacteria that may have been eliminated during, you know, someone who's been on antibiotics, and not even necessarily for Lyme, you know, if they're prone to sinus infections and bronchial infections, you know, they may have been on antibiotics for other reasons. But all of that, unfortunately, does have a adverse effect on your gut microbiome or your gut flora. So I talk about specifically how we can, you know, use these nutrients, use these herbs to help, you know, rebuild the integrity of the gut. And ultimately, that helps rebuild the immune system.
And is there one key herb or one key nutrient? In other words, is it magnesium or is it, if you will, one of the herbs that's key?
Well, I think out of all the gut things I use, you know, probiotics are probably the one thing that most people benefit from. for various reasons. And again, there's just so much research coming out about the health benefits of probiotics, not just in their immune modulating effects, but again, also helping improve the integrity of the gut, reducing allergies and sensitivities. So if I had to pick one thing that I think anybody could take safely, that would probably be probiotics.
And another area you talk about is diet. Anything specific in diet that we can give, the one thing in diet, I guess you'd say, or maybe there are five things in diet?
Well, the diet, you know, that I found really helps most people with Lyme is what we call an alkaline diet. And what that means is that you're eating foods that really kind of help alter the pH of your cells. And really, you know, physiologically, your body functions best in an alkaline pH, with the exception of your stomach, your bladder, and for women, the vaginal area, which is very acidic, to protect against outside invaders. The rest of your body is actually very alkaline, yet we're exposed to so many different things through chemicals and medications and other substances that tend to make our body very acidic. But the byproduct of acid is really inflammation. So what an alkaline diet really does is help, you know, reduce inflammation. And in a nutshell, it's basically eating a mostly plant-based diet. We try and keep animal protein down to 20% or less of your dietary intake. And it's really eliminating any known food allergies or any kind of junk foods. And that also includes coffee and dairy products because these are very acid-forming in the body. So by keeping those, you know, high acid foods down, we can really start altering pH. And again, that just makes the cells work a little bit better.
If I was going to say, what's other than covering up, and maybe covering up is the best thing, is there one thing I've been told to wear DEET when I cover up and walk in Connecticut? In Ohio, I'm an avid walker, and no one's told me to cover up or wear DEET. But if I was in Connecticut, is DEET a good thing to put on my clothes, or is that just a wives' tale?
Well, DEET is what's recommended conventionally. I would avoid DEET like the plague. You know, DEET is a highly toxic substance. And if it's something that, you know, you're, again, an avid walker, you're out regularly and you're constantly applying DEET, your skin inevitably is going to absorb it, or you're going to be breathing it in. And again, it can cause toxic side effects. So, you know, there are actually some really great natural products that are mostly comprised of essential oils. And again, you can go to your health food store or find them online. But we know things like eucalyptus oil, thyme oil, lavender oil, lemongrass oil, cedar oil, tea tree oil. There's a whole bunch of them that are actually very effective of, you know, keeping ticks away. And the government has actually looked at these essential oil products and found, again, that they're at least as effective as DEET, and you don't get all the toxic side effects.
So some of these oils plus this. We've been talking with Dr. Darren Ingles, DarinIngelsND.com is the website, about the Lyme solution, a five-part plan or program. And you can go to his website, DarinIngelsND.com, for more information. Or the book is of course, called the same one I gave you before, The Lyme Solution. This is Dr. Roizen. You've been listening to podcast number 897B of You, the Owner's Manual. Please do keep downloading us. Please do rate us. And Darren, thanks again for being on the show. The other Darren and Ben, thanks for great engineering. And especially thank you for downloading us.